Welcome to AgTech 360, where we take a 360-degree view into emerging agriculture technologies of today and tomorrow. Our host, Adrian Percy, helps us to create robust dialogue among stakeholders in academia, industry, and extension, including researchers, growers, producers, and the overall agriculture sustainability community. AgTech 360 is brought to you by North Carolina State University, CERSA, the Center of Excellence for Regulatory Science in Agriculture, and the Southern IPM Center.
This is Adrian Percy for AgTech 360, and I am in the beautiful city of Vancouver, British Columbia, up in Canada. And I'm here with Khan Manhas, who is the CEO of a really interesting company called Terramera. And today we're going to talk a little bit about Khan, a little bit about the ambitions that his company has to replace synthetic chemistry and to reduce the use of synthetic chemistry in agriculture, and perhaps also a little bit about something called a BHAG that Khan is going to tell us about. So welcome, Khan. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Adrian.
Really appreciate it. Yeah, thank you. So tell me a little bit about yourself. I look at you as someone with an enormously broad skill set. You've been a lawyer, a scientist, a politician, and now an entrepreneur, and that must make a very, interesting combination of skills. So how did you get to where you are today? Tell us a little bit about your background.
It hasn't been the straightest line path. I wouldn't say that there's a grand design behind it. I think my background, what I studied was biology and biotechnology. I decided when I was doing my honors research that I decided not to go on to complete my graduate studies, only because I'm fascinated with how what we do and discover gets out in the world. And it was just taking too long. And I just didn't have the patience. And that led me to a few other paths. Politics was an odd, an odd departure. I didn't plan for it. It just kind of happened. I've always been, I think outspoken in ideas and somewhat involved in politics. And when I was asked to run, I thought it was a joke and I had other plans. And it's funny to say it just happened, but it kind of just did happen.
So what was the elective office that you actually held there?
I ran and I was elected as a member of the provincial parliament, as a member of the Legislative Assembly in British Columbia. I loved it. It was an incredible experience. I was in my early 20s. Probably the hardest thing was making that decision to basically say, okay, I'm going to pause life for a moment and go in and take 4 years and go do public service. I got to see a lot of interesting things done. I had in my mind committed myself to say, if I did it one term, I would have to commit to at least two terms. But I'm a bit of an entrepreneur at heart, so I never wanted to be a career politician, and that was really important for me.
So in your 20s is pretty impressive. Now, the new Prime Minister of Finland is in her 20s, so that's maybe amazing. You were just kind of creating the pathway for her and others to follow you. But so then, Terramera. So tell me a little bit about Terramera, what it stands for, and what is the origins of the company, which may have even started in the garage of your house here in Vancouver.
Yeah. Terramera actually literally means our earth. And it started actually, again, out of an argument. This was while I was in law school. It started an argument around natural products and that natural materials could never be as effective as synthetics, which really makes no sense from a biological perspective or an evolutionary perspective. Trees and plants have evolved some of the most sophisticated methods of being able to protect themselves and thrive in some of the most difficult conditions. It makes no sense that biologics would be somehow inherently worse than small molecule synthetics. Most of the synthetics we use have never really existed before the last 100 years. And that concept is really what drove the start of Terramera, to try to deconstruct and understand why it was the case that biologics were performing less effectively, because the market showed that organics weren't as effective according to the presence of biologics in the market. 97% of the market even today.
In the agricultural space, you're talking about.
Yeah, in agriculture. So pest control in general is mostly in agriculture, about $80 billion spent on pest control and crop protection. Of that, a little over $70 billion is in agriculture. And 97% of the pest control materials that are purchased are synthetic. What we wanted to understand is what is holding back the use of natural materials, because from any kind of perspective, it doesn't make sense that biologics shouldn't be just as effective as synthetics. So what was holding back the use of this whole enormous set of chemistries. When we deconstructed it, really, we looked to pharmaceuticals, actually, to see what was going on there. And in the last few decades, one of the major things that's happened in pharmaceuticals is that we've gone from a time in the 80s and prior where almost all new medicines that were coming out, all new drugs coming out were small molecule synthetics, to today where majority of new medicines coming out come from biological sources and there are large molecules. And what happened in pharma was a few things, that there was more of an interest to look at traditional medicines and what actually was working. One of the problems with biologics is, you know, you have these complex chemistries and a heterogeneous mix of all kinds of compounds. So it just means synthetics, you're just producing one particular compound in a biologic. When you take an extract, there's so many different things in there. Nobody knew what was actually working and what was not. And sometimes when you pull those apart, they actually have a relationship with each other that mm-hmm. when you start pulling out just one molecule out of this mix, it doesn't work as well. That degree of complexity, I think, held back the use of biologics. In medicine, still what they tried to do is look at least places where they were able to characterize what was working and what was not and do a better characterization of traditional medicines and natural extracts. That's the first thing. The second is, because they're much larger naturally occurring materials, biology is designed to kind of work in a system, and these natural molecules tend to degrade. That's a positive thing because it recycles materials back into a system. The negative thing is that they degrade. And so you have to make sure that they're stable enough to be active. But the third area was really what I think was the aha that Termera really focused around, which was the fact that there were larger molecules meant that they have different kinds of issues when you're trying to apply them. So if these materials actually needed to get in through cell membranes, mm-hmm. then it's harder to get a larger material through than it is smaller materials. So what we were looking at is part of the problem with biologics that you can't actually get enough of the material bioavailable because enough of it doesn't get absorbed, if you will, to the right place. And so we really tried to look to see if you could transform the performance of biologics by increasing the absorption and penetration and targeting them into the right cell membranes. And what we found is that the effect was transformational. If you could get enough of a dose of these biologics taken up to the right place, they could perform just as well or better than the premium synthetics. What we focused on over the last, well, been almost a decade since the first argument happened, has been developing technologies that could scale in agriculture that could help increase the uptake of these large molecules into targeted cells.
And thereby, you know, essentially making biologicals a much more effective and useful tool. That's for right. growers in the field. Whereas you said earlier, I mean, the synthetic chemistry that has been available for 100 years, as you put it, has been very successful in supporting, you know, the increasing efficiency of farming and increasing yields and protection against harvest losses. But it's clear that there has been a public backlash against a lot of the use of these types of chemistry, concerns over effects on the environment, concerns mm-hmm. over the effects on human health. And many people now are looking for alternatives. And obviously, biologicals offer one. But yeah. if, on the other hand, you have issues around them being effective tools, then clearly that's not a great thing for growers who are looking to meet, you know, expectations of the food chain and, right. and supermarkets and the public. Yeah. So with the Termera technology, then you've succeeded in your mind in actually making some of these biologicals much more effective?
Oh, absolutely. We've shown that you can take poor performing biologic that in some cases may even be seen as a snake oil that has a low level of performance. And if we can get that material and characterize what is actually working, but then actually get that material taken up to the right place, you can have it perform at very, very high levels of activity. And so the key is how to be able to do that at a lab scale, and then how do you do that in a way that can scale at a very large scale to be mm-hmm. used so that it's highly consistent and performing at very high levels on farm. And we've seen that. We have a lot coming through the pipeline. We launched our first product with this called Rango, which has started to be made available here this year. I think there's a huge amount of potential. Our focus is actually not to make our own products. We made Rango and our first set of products really to show that this worked, to get it out into the market that, you know, to test the regulatory system around it as well. But our real focus is over the years ahead to get this out to the market so we can license this into producers of crop protection products so that they can increase the performance of their products as well.
Yeah. Okay, interesting.
You know, you were mentioning the use of conventionals and biologics. I mean, even if conventionals are performing, and even if there wasn't a public backlash, there still is more of a need to have better tools out there. And if we can harness and actually start applying this huge range of chemistries, does it make sense that we put aside natural chemistries and naturally occurring chemistries from our toolkits? If we can take this enormous set of chemistries and make some of those useful, that's helpful for everybody.
No, I mean, that's absolutely right. I mean, there is a need for more tools, and whether they come from synthetic origins or from biological origins,
yeah,
farmers need those. And we see that with the buildup of resistance to herbicides, to fungicides and insecticides globally,
yeah,
where often in many cases, farmers don't have adequate tools to protect their crops. And that's in all of our interests to have, obviously, a secure food supply, and farmers need those tools to provide that for us. I totally get your point there.
Yeah.
That brings me to another question, which is, what is a BHAG?
Yeah.
Tell me what a BHAG is.
So BHAG is a big, hairy, audacious goal. and we have a few of those. We've set out to reduce synthetic chemistry, the synthetic chemical load, by 80% by 2030.
Wow, that is a number. Because as you said before, we're looking at a total market size of tens of billions, maybe 60 to 80 billion.
Yeah.
Most of those are synthetics. Right. I don't know what that represents in terms of pounds on the ground, but that is obviously a lot of synthetics that you're looking to be the instigator in helping to replace.
Yes. And we have the technology to be able to do that. So the reason we set these audacious goals is because these technologies are not just interesting as potential tools, but they're only effective on a global scale if we go out and actually scale them. Why we set these audacious goals is to say, okay, how do we actually get this out and scale this to a level where it's globally significant and can make a difference? There's two ways that we are able to do this. One is, I was saying, we can take this Actigate chemistry and make biologicals perform much more effectively so we can have better biological tools. But by 2030, you know, we're not going to reduce 80% of the synthetic load by only increasing the number of biological tools. It's also by applying this on synthetics. So what we've seen is we can actually take Actigate technology and actually reduce the dose of synthetics that are required for the same level of performance. So you can do a lot more with less. So we can apply Actigate technology to existing synthetic molecules. And instead of being, let's say, having 500 grams per acre be the effective amount of the active ingredient that is required, you might be able to have the same level of effect with 50. So by reducing it by a tenth.
And maintain the same level of efficacy.
And maintain the same level of performance.
Well, so, I mean, that affords all kinds of potential advantages. Human health, exposure to pesticides, which is obviously a concern, and we all try to limit that. Off-target effects in the environment,
yeah,
but also perhaps the cost of goods of the products as well, which I'm assuming you could help reduce. And,
yeah,
and perhaps also there may be cases where you can actually increase the effectiveness. So not just come in with a lower dose rate, which is equivalent to what is being used now, but perhaps increase the effectiveness and overcome some of these resistance issues, perhaps with certain products that we're seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. Toxicity level of any material is dependent on dose. So if you're able to reduce that by, you know, 90%, it has a quantum change in what is usable and what's not usable and what the effects on the environment and non-targets might be.
So would it be fair to say then you're looking to disrupt the pesticide industry, but actually doing it from within, because you're actually looking to work with basic manufacturers of current pesticides and crop protection products?
Absolutely. I think everybody in the agriculture space knows we need to make changes in agriculture to make the whole system sustainable. And everybody feels that they are stewards of trying to do the right things. And I think that we have the ability to help. You know, I think a lot of the basic manufacturers want to try to get better products out and improve the products that they do have. You know, these tools are necessary for farmers. And if we can make them more efficient with a lighter load on the environment and a more sustainable formulation, I think that's a win for everybody.
Yeah. So moving away perhaps from Terra Mera a little bit and talking more generally around AgTech, which is what this podcast is all about. I mean, you're obviously very clued into the Canadian AgTech ecosystem, but I think probably globally as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, from your perspective, what are the kind of trends, the key trends and things that are happening with new technology that we can expect to see really affecting how we farm, how we produce food in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years?
Well, I think this concept of needing to do more with less is something that farmers are used to thinking about and hearing. And that's something that technology is going to be applied to change how agriculture is done. Right now, a lot of farmers have thin margins. They don't have a lot of choices. And we're living in this incredible time where technology is moving so fast. When I say technology, I talk about technology writ large. Now, that includes digital technologies as well as biology and biological technologies, chemistry technologies. The types of things that we're doing right now are so complex that you couldn't really figure out how to be able to scale them without having the support of quite complex computational chemistry and computational capabilities that we didn't have 10 years ago or 20 years ago. That gives us a whole bunch more tools to be able to support change. The digital revolution doesn't just mean it's all about precision agriculture, and that's going to be important as well, but it affects what kinds of technologies we can come up with to help increase the productivity and sustainability on farm. And I think all of what the ag tech space is doing and is going to be focused on is how do we change agriculture so that it is more profitable for farmers, it is more consistent, it's more predictive, and it's sustainable, and we create a healthier system of food production.
I think that's the common goal, as you say. I just reflect that in so many aspects of our lives, in so many industrial sectors, new technology and science has advanced the way we live, basically, to completely new ways and perhaps ways that were not even recognizable from how we were living 10 years ago. Maybe farming, maybe agriculture has lagged a little bit behind some of those changes. But with the types of technologies that you're looking to develop and others are looking to develop, we can see now perhaps an exponential change in the way agriculture is being done. Would you agree with that?
I absolutely agree with that. Agriculture has lagged behind some other industries, actually most industries. And McKinsey did a report on digital adoption and agriculture was dead last. That was a few years ago, but even in these last few years, you can see a change. Now that's going to have to happen on farm as well, but the amount of technology that is being looked at, if you look at the number of companies that have grown in every area in the US and Canada and Israel and the Netherlands, around the world in ag tech, it's mushrooming. And the reason why is there's a level of interest and a level of understanding that this is going to be important, not just economically, but for the future of an entire industry. And not to sound over the top, but for the future of humanity, that we actually develop better systems that allow us to sustain ourselves beyond 20 years, beyond 50 years, beyond 100 years.
So maybe last point, obviously we're in the beautiful city of Vancouver, which I always enjoy visiting here on the west coast of Canada. We're a long way, though, from the Canadian prairies, where a lot of the agriculture in this country takes place, and of course, a long way from many other major agricultural centers of the world. So what makes Vancouver special? Why is Terra Mera here, and how do you seek to influence the agricultural world globally from where we are here today?
It's interesting. Sometimes technologies develop in the most unlikely places. You know, I think Vancouver is a really interesting ecosystem in that there is a high level of interest on how you can develop practical solutions that are more sustainable over a longer run. And the culture along the West Coast and in Vancouver is one where there's a lot of entrepreneurialism, a lot of young people, great schools, just like in North Carolina, there's a hub of a number of schools that are putting out great students. And what we have is this ability to go very multidisciplinary in those levels of interest. So a lot of folks that have been developing in the tech sector here are interested in actually wanting to apply their skills into something that matters a little bit more than designing games. That's made an interesting ecosystem to draw some really top talent into something that's really meaningful. That's a little bit of what's happening in some other ecosystems as well. I think there's also a huge huge clean tech focus here in Vancouver. I think there was a report that KPMG did that something like 2/3 of all of the clean tech companies in Canada are in Greater Vancouver. And that's a huge cluster of entrepreneurs and companies that are focused on trying to see how can we use technology to actually change processes and industries and systems. And the focus, I think, in clean tech has become not just how do you use technology to make a system more sustainable. I think what's been working here is this belief that it can't be just more sustainable. It has to be better than what is being used right now, more economical, result in higher profitability. It has to be all of those things and more sustainable. And I think that focus on trying to find more solutions that meet a larger number of goals and questions, not just profitability, is what's made an interesting place for innovation.
I think it's so exciting, given that we have this almost dichotomy between the rural communities in places like North America and the very, very fast-growing urban centers that we've, in an urban center like Vancouver, there is many purpose-driven young people who are excited about getting into agriculture and making a difference, even if perhaps they've not spent a lot of time on a farm in their lives. Mm-hmm. I think that just shows that food and food production, the environment, agriculture is something that is actually belonged to by all of us. And we all want to contribute to the success of that. We all have an interest in that it's successful. And you just have to walk around the streets of Vancouver and you can here, there are drills going in this building because yeah. They're basically constructing skyscrapers either side of the building we are in, that this is a really thriving metropolis and exciting place to be.
Yeah.
So, Khan, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
We wish you a lot of luck with your BHAG.
Thank you.
With Terramera.
We'll get it done.
With looking to really make a difference in agriculture and provide growers with tools which are effective, but at the same time, reducing the chemical load that we're putting into our environment, which I think all of us would agree is a good thing. So thanks very much.
Thank you. Thanks, Adrian.
AgTech 360 is a product of North Carolina State University, CERSA, the Center of Excellence for Regulatory Science in Agriculture, and the Southern IPM Center. This episode was produced by Kayla Pack Watson, with host Adrian Percy and Center Director Dr. Dinesha Seth Carley. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at AgTech360 and send us questions and comments to agtech360@gmail.com. With AgTech 360, we take a 360-degree view inside emerging agriculture technologies that matter. Thanks for listening.